This is KBOX Heart of the Arts Podcast. I'm Greg Kostrapa. Janet Green is the executive director of the Phoenix Chamber Music Society, and she's in the studio to chat about the upcoming season. Welcome.
Thank you. Thank you.
So good to have you here. I know the society started back in 1960, so a while ago, with concerts performed by a quartet of Phoenix Symphony members. How did it get from those humble beginnings to the extensive programming that you have today?
Many, many passionate people. Louise Lincoln Kerr and Louis Ruskin were the founders. And one of them wanted to have a chamber music society so that they could have the teachers from ASU and the symphony people be able to play classical music and chamber music. And the other one, Louise Lincoln Kerr, just wanted a place for her friends to be able to play. And chamber music has always been a passion of a small number of people. Much smaller than a symphony. People seem to be drawn to the symphony. And the questions that I always get are, well, I don't know if I understand chamber music. To which I always say, it's anybody who will fit in your chamber. I could fit Chanticleer, 12-man singing group, in my chamber, in my living room, very comfortably. Anything that is small, smaller than a huge symphony orchestra. So it draws people who are a little bit more interested in intimate music. When you're watching a chamber music concert, I always feel like I'm intruding on somebody's conversation. It's four people, six people, however many people are in the group, arguing back and forth, laughing with each other, joking, being sad. You hear all the emotions come through their music, and you don't have a conductor up there leading the way. You have the musicians all interacting with each other, having this musical conversation. And everybody who dearly loves chamber music knows that that's why they come. I've been going to chamber music concerts since I was about 15 or 16 years old. My Viennese piano teacher, Annie Steinbach, was on the board. And she insisted that I go to this. And I went, yeah. I'm like any 15-year-old. Sure, I'll get my mom to take me there. And I could get in for $1 and hear the greatest concerts around. I heard the Budapest String Quartet. I heard all these incredible, incredible groups. People flocked to it. There was nothing in the 60s that was completely professional in Phoenix. The symphony had some paid people, and it was a lot of people who kind of volunteered and people from ASU who were teachers. That has evolved now, where that's not the symphony. But when chamber music, the Chamber Music Society was formed, at first we had just local groups, and then the attorney who kind of set this all up, Jerry Freumsen, worked to organize it. And he told the board one day, you know, we could get a grant from the Library of Congress to bring in really, really good groups, really well known. And evidently the board told him, nah, nobody would like to come to that, or that won't fly. We'll never be able to afford it. And they did. They tried it once. And it worked. The response was incredible. And so Care Cultural Center, ASU Care Cultural Center now, Louise Lincoln Kerr built that for us, for her society. And it only holds about 250 people. And so we outgrew it. So they started doing things like having two concerts, one on Friday night and one on Saturday night. By that time, I could drive, and I was so addicted to this that I went to both concerts and heard the group play two different sets of concerts. It was so much fun. And they just kept growing, and more people kept coming. It was so good. And in 75, we moved to the Scottsdale Center for the Arts. It was the big new building, and we were their anchor. We were the flagship organization that was there. That was fun because they could hold 600 people. And so the society grew. It was so large that we had a two-year waiting list. So you had to wait until someone passed on or they were too ill to come to the concerts anymore. And the only way you could get a seat for that evening was if somebody was sick or was on vacation and they couldn't come.
I've heard of that with sports teams, where people actually then pass on their tickets to their children in their wills and their estates. I've not heard of this with chamber music. It's astounding. So you were at the Scottsdale Center for a while, and then you seemed to outgrow that pretty quickly.
No, what happened was the Scottsdale Center went dark. They did their big remodel in our 50th season, and they called me one day and said, you're going to have to find another place for at least a year. We're completely remodeling the theater.
Wow.
So that's when we moved to Camelback Bible. And we had been talking about this because Scottsdale was getting so popular. And they had their own series. And we were relegated to only, Tuesday nights, Wednesday nights, Thursday nights. We can't give you Friday or Saturdays or Sundays. So we were having issues of getting groups in and being able to do concerts on weekends. It just wasn't able to happen. So moving to Camelback Bible, that was wonderful. And we were there for, I don't remember how many years now, 7 years, 8 years maybe. And then something happened. They were not able to reserve our dates for the next year. And we looked around and found Central United Methodist Church that had really good acoustics and the right number of seats. And so we moved over there. And then this past April, Central Methodist closed their doors. The church completely closed. And here we were again looking for another venue. And I said to the board, I'm going to be bald by the end of this season. I'm going to pull all my hair out. This is the third time for me as the executive director looking for a home. But at that time, Camelback Bible had changed. They have a brand new organ. They were looking for people to kind of anchor a good concert season. And we just hit that on the right moment.
How do you decide what groups to bring in each year? You've brought touring groups in for decades now. What's the process for picking these groups?
David Schifrin, who runs the festival for us, he only does the festival. And I stay out of his hair and say, yes, sir. And I, along with the artistic committee, hire all the artists for the season. We have a very robust committee. We were already booked for the next year, and we're starting on the following year. So we're working always 2 years in advance.
I would think so, given how busy these performers are, that you have to find times for them to be able to come in.
And talking to the agents, they have to coordinate this. They can't have a group coming out to Arizona and then flying back to New York the next day and then flying back to California. They try to, do a nice tour so that they're not on an airplane all day long and then playing a concert at night. Last year, we had as our brand new group was the Isidore Quartet. When we hired them, they were not even out of Juilliard School of Music. They won the Banff International Award. We balance this. We have well-established groups, well-loved groups by the audience, people they want to have come back. And we have some new people coming in.
Let's talk about this upcoming season, because there's a lot going on. You have a number of concerts in addition to the festival. And let's start off with the Dover Quartet. They're coming in on Sunday afternoon, October 27th.
Yes, that's going to be very exciting. We don't have a lot of concerts on an afternoon, but that's when their tour allowed it. Friday night, they're doing a concert somewhere. They're traveling on Saturday, and so Sunday they'll do the concert for us. I'm very, very excited about having them back. They're one of our audience's favorites.
Okay. And then another string quartet with pianist Enon Barnaton with the Jerusalem Quartet. That's Saturday, November 9th. Enon Barnaton, a fabulous pianist in the Jerusalem Quartet, just been around for quite a while now.
I'm a pianist. He's one of my favorites. We have had him on our series since he was early 20s. Neat guy. And the Jerusalem we haven't had for a number of years. And they're wonderful.
And then later that month, on November 22nd, there's a Friday evening concert that's called Espressivo. Tell us a little bit about that. That's not the name of a group, right?
Yes.
Oh, it is?
Yes, with the exclamation point behind it.
Okay. Tell me a little bit about them.
You might know two of the members in Espressivo a little better. It was the piano trio Kalickstein, Laredo Robinson, and Yossi Kalickstein passed on. And Jamie and Sharon said, we just don't want to really play trios anymore. They did that for so many years, and it was such a part of their hearts. And to lose Yossi Kalickstein really hurt. So they decided they would start playing quartets. And Milena van der Staat, who used to be with the Dover Quartet, is now with them as a violist. And they now have Anna Polonsky as a pianist, who is wonderful. So they're playing quartets. And this concert especially is really neat because Yossi Kalickstein played his very last concert of his life with us. So they're coming back. Our composer in residence, Tula Nokutula Ingwenyama, has composed a piece called Joy Stepping in memory of Yossi, who was just full of joy. They're a group that is really dear to our hearts, and this will be, I think it's the first time that we've heard this group as its new formation, and especially that they're it's the Arizona premiere of Joy Stepping with Tula.
Then that's it for the fall. In the spring, you're bringing in a chamber orchestra, which to my mind isn't exactly chamber music because you tend to have more than one person to a part in a chamber orchestra. Is this East Coast Chamber Orchestra different than that somehow?
They can fit in my living room.
Got it. That's right. You said that earlier.
I believe it's 16 people, 18 people. It varies. And they stand while they play. They are playing with a pianist, Shai Wozner, for this concert, and they're wonderful. So chamber music is more of a size. It's your chamber. Just remember your big living room. And could the group fit in there? That's the definition of chamber music.
All right. And then the Amani Winds come in after that on January 24th for a concert. Tell me a little bit about their program.
Their former flute player was Valerie Coleman. They are playing a piece that was written by Valerie Coleman. And they're playing a piece that was written by David Schifrin's cousin, Lalo Schifrin. And they're ending the program with The Rite of Spring. So it's going to be really neat. And we have them back about every two to three years. Again, a big audience favorite. And they won a Grammy last year.
Indeed, they did. And then you've got the festival coming up. We're going to talk to David Schifrin more about that in a few months. So I'm going to kind of skip over that for now and move on to March 7th with the Brentano Quartet.
The Brentano is coming in. And again, they were here, I think, 3 years ago. We have to bring back the groups that the audience loves. People want to see groups or hear groups whom they dearly love and that they've heard before, along with a few new ones, but they want that comfort of, oh, I know this group is always good. And the Brentano is wonderful.
And then it wraps up with the Chamber Music Society of Lincoln Center. That's Saturday, March 22nd.
Everybody has their favorite piece that they could just hear all the time. Mine is the Trout Quintet. And when the artistic committee voted, yeah, it's time to have Lincoln Center again. And we have them at least every other year because it's always a different group that is pulled from Lincoln Center. When I saw the program and they're trying to decide, well, which program are we going to select? I don't have a vote on this committee. I can scream and shout and yell and jump up and down, but at the end of the day, they can't choose to ignore me. And I just said, it has to be the program with the Trout Quintet on it. So that's the ending piece of the season. I could hear that piece every concert. Just my happy place.
Before each of the concerts, you have a pre-concert chat as well. That starts at 7 o'clock. The concerts are at 7:30, each of them. But for about 15 minutes, pre-concert chat. Tell us a little bit about how that developed. That seems like something that makes a lot of sense, especially for people that may be just kind of new to chamber music.
Yes. Marlene Rausch, who used to play with the Phoenix Symphony, she's on the board. And she had been talking about this. Many other societies do this, and symphonies do this, where they have a pre-concert little thing where they talk to the conductor, they talk to a musician, and Marlene always grabs a musician. They talk about the program that night or what's going on in the group's life. I'm sure she will talk to the Imani about how exciting that was to win a Grammy. And the piece that the Imani and the Harlem Quartet won a Grammy on was performed for us. It was one of the premiere of that piece, A Passion for Bach and Coltrane. And that's what they won the Grammy for. So she'll talk about that. And we have one that's not on our brochure. There is another component of the society with Nokutula Ngwenyama being around. She is our composer in residence. We're very fortunate to be one of the few chamber music societies in the nation that has someone like that. And she curates a program called Composer's Choice. And she brings people in. She has people, Tom Landschutz, a cellist here, and Ruggero Alefrancini is also a violinist here. She's bringing in this year David Ludwig, who is a composer, and he and his wife are playing on this. And if any of you remember the program From the Top, Christopher O'Reilly will be there playing. And this program is February 8th. It's a Saturday afternoon at 2 p.m. And that comes with wine and hors d'oeuvres and a wonderful concert and being able to chat with Tula and David and ask them about composing. How did they do that? And we have one other that just dropped in our lap. It's December 7th. We usually stay out of December. There's so many other dates around. But the first chair violinist with the Harlem Quartet, Ilmar Gavilan, is coming with his brother, Aldo, pianist and violin. And they've made a wonderful documentary that you can find. And they're going to be playing a program of Cuban songs that Aldo has written. That will be at a private studio. And again, wine and hors d'oeuvres and come hear some Cuban music. We're going to see if we can round up some Cuban food, too.
Janet Green, the executive director of the Phoenix Chamber Music Society, which kicks off with the Dover Quartet on October 27th. Tickets and more information about the series at phoenixchambermusicsociety.org. Janet, thanks so much for coming in.
Thank you.
For the KBOC Heart of the Arts podcast, I'm Greg Kostrapa.